It is Friday, February 5th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, a UN panel rules WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange has been arbitrarily detained. We'll talk with our correspondent in London. Health authorities continue to battle the Zika virus. And rapper Andre 3000 of Outkast surprises a fan. It's all ahead. A United Nations panel has ruled that WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange has been arbitrarily detained since 2012. Assange has been at Ecuador's embassy in London for more than 4 years. For more on this developing story, I'm joined by VOA correspondent Luis Ramirez, who's in London. Well, Luis, at the moment, what is known about this ruling? Is this binding?
Sarah, this ruling is not legally binding, and immediately after it came down, both Sweden and Britain rejected it, saying that, well, Britain is saying that it is obliged to arrest Assange as soon as he comes out of the Ecuadorian embassy. Sweden says it will not impact its investigation on rape allegations into Mr. Assange.
So has Assange, he has signaled that he intends to leave the Ecuador embassy?
Assange has been making statements since Thursday, saying that all he wants to do is leave the Ecuadorian embassy a free man. He wants his Australian passport back. He wants the freedom to travel. And he notes that he has not been accused formally of any crime yet. He also said that he wants a termination of these investigations.
However, under the law, are British authorities, are they obligated to arrest him?
Britain has extradition treaties with Sweden, and under those treaties, it is definitely obliged to extradite him. Now, Assange, of course, has not been charged in Sweden. They simply want to ask him questions about an alleged rape that occurred in 2010.
Well, over the years, WikiLeaks has published hundreds of thousands of documents detailing U.S. military operations in Afghanistan and Iraq. Does Assange believe that the real reason for his prosecution is really political in nature?
Most definitely he does, and his supporters have been saying so on the WikiLeaks site and on the WikiLeaks Twitter account. They say that these charges of rape, or they're not even charges yet, these allegations of rape are trumped up. They quote the woman who's involved in the case as saying that the Swedish police railroaded her. That's the term she used presenting any kind of accusation against Assange. Well, in his mind is really the issue here is the fact that he deeply angered U.S. officials and embarrass them by exposing, making public these secret cables and secret files and videos.
My thanks to VOA correspondent Luis Ramirez reporting from London. Thanks a lot, Luis.
Thank you, Sarah.
There's growing concern about the complexity facing health officials on controlling the spread of the Zika virus, given the revelation this week that the disease was passed on by sexual contact in the southwest U.S. state of Texas. Christian Lindmeier, a World Health Organization spokesman in Geneva, says such a transmission is still considered rare.
We have seen only 2 cases so far of sexual transmission. So while it seems possible that the virus spreads through semen and is possibly transmittable through blood, these are so far only the rare cases of transmission. What we do see is a huge majority of mosquito infections. But of course, it is important right now to study carefully this possible transmission of sexual transmission. Right now, it's recommendable to practice what WHO has been recommending all the way along, safe sex, which would be the best way to prevent any sort of infection.
The WHO, which declared a global public health emergency over the Zika virus on Monday, said at least 26 countries in the Americas have an outbreak. The mosquito-borne disease may be linked to a birth defect called microcephaly, linked to babies born with abnormally small heads, as well as a paralyzing nerve disorder. Latin American health ministers, faced with a potential of millions of infections, met in Uruguay Wednesday to discuss coordination of efforts. Florida State Governor Rick Scott Wednesday declared a public health emergency in four counties with travel-related cases of Zika. Dr. Steve Redd of the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention urges Americans who have plans to travel overseas to be cautious.
There's information about this virus causing birth defects that have been seen in other parts of the world. There's more to be learned about that. For people traveling to that part of the world, it's important to protect yourselves from mosquito bites. For pregnant women considering traveling to those parts of the world, you probably should consider not traveling to those parts of the world. That right now, those are the main messages.
At least two U.S. airlines are giving flight crews the option of avoiding travel to infected areas. Sanjaya Senanayake, an associate professor in medicine and an expert on infectious diseases at the Australian National University, tells International Edition's Victor Beattie, spreading Zika by sexual contact makes it more difficult to combat the illness.
The mosquito mode of transmission is likely to be the really big factor. So if we can control the Aedes aegypti mosquito, then we can largely control Zika. But in the past, there have been these, I guess, oddities or rarities. The first case that I was aware of was a Colorado scientist who went to Senegal in 2008, I believe, and then came back to America, and he and then his wife, who hadn't traveled, became infected, and she got it from him and probably sexually, that's what was thought, and that was published. And in Tahiti, a couple of years ago, a man had Zika infection, and a few weeks after that, his reproductive fluid was tested, and it was found to be positive for Zika virus. So at that time, we thought Zika virus could stay in male reproductive fluid for a while. Now, this, of course, has coming on the background with this huge outbreak and unprecedented numbers that we're seeing on your doorstep in Central and South America, and in the context of birth defects. So infected sperm and birth defects is not a good combination. So it certainly is something that is very important we have to think about. And I believe some guidelines have already been sent out regarding men who've had Zika practicing protected sex for 6 months or so. And if you think back to Ebola, we've never seen such an unprecedented Ebola outbreak. And we suddenly started seeing things we hadn't seen. For example, we thought Ebola could last in sperm for 2 months after the infection, but we suddenly found that it was lasting as long as 9 months. One other thing that should be done, now that an emergency has been declared by the World Health Organization, freeing up lots of money and resources, I think it's an opportune time to take hundreds of men in Central and South America who've had proven Zika and testing their sperm reproductive fluid at various stages after the illness to see if they can detect Zika. And on the basis of that, recommendations could be made.
That is Sanjaya Senanayake. He says with no treatment available, controlling the mosquito is key to controlling the Zika virus. Now for a look at what's trending, I'm joined by International Edition's social media editor, Andrew Palshevsky. Hello, Andrew.
Hey, thanks for having me here. Well, happy birthday to Facebook. Facebook turned 12 on February 4th, and so to celebrate that, they put out something called Friends Day. This is a hashtag that's even trending on Twitter, Friends Day. But as part of this, they put out a video that you can click on and see what your best moments were from Facebook. It shows you some of your friends, shows you some of the comments and likes that you've gotten on your photos, some of the most liked photos that you have, and some key moments as a way to kind of share that with their followers. And the nice thing about that is you can watch the video, and if you like what you see, you can then share it with your friends. I watched mine, and they seem to have missed the mark on some of the moments that they highlighted for me. But anytime you have an algorithm, I think, that's putting together photos, that is something that you run the risk of doing.
Well, they've done something similar in the past. They did one, a couple years ago about a little Facebook video.
Yeah, this is something that they're trying to be more interactive, I think, and trying to connect people to Facebook as a brand by saying, look at these great moments in your life. Look at how Facebook captured those moments and shared those moments. So I think we're going to see more of this as these milestones come up, more of these little films that they put together, hopefully with better algorithms so they get make up for the mistakes where they have them. And also part of this Friends Day, this anniversary of Facebook, they've done a study on how people are separated on Facebook. And, you know, the you know old saying, it's 6 degrees of separation. Well, they've actually found that Facebook is about 3.5 degrees of separation between everyone in the world, about 1.6 billion people in the world that use Facebook. They're only separated by an average of 3.5 people. So it's amazing to think about. You take those three and a half steps and you're halfway around the world connected to somebody else. And the nice thing, if you go to research.facebook.com, they actually show you what your separation score is. So mine was actually below the average. Mine was 3.27. Oh. So I guess I'm a little better connected than other people. Sheryl Sandberg, the chief operating officer of Facebook, had one of 2.92. Mm. So she's less than three people connected to everybody in the world, I guess because she's the COO of Facebook.
Yeah, she must know everybody.
Yeah, it seems to be.
Thanks very much, Andrew. That's social media editor Andrew Palshevsky. This is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
California scientists have found that people who frequently check their Facebook pages may not be doing so because they enjoy the interactivity of social media, but because they may not be getting enough sleep. After analyzing data collected from 76 undergraduate students, researchers from the University of California, Irvine, say that they found a direct link between chronic lack of sleep, a bad mood, and an increased dependence on checking out Facebook pages. The study also showed a link between sleep deprivation and being distracted. According to the study's lead researcher, Gloria Mark, if someone is distracted, they often go online and check their Facebook page because it's easy and they're tired. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention has called sleep deprivation a public health epidemic. Lack of sleep has been linked to potentially life-threatening incidents like car and industrial accidents. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, a rapper has a special surprise for a fan. As fans of American football gear up for this coming weekend's 50th annual Super Bowl, police, the FBI, and other security officials are preparing for what will likely be one of the most highly guarded events ever held here in the U.S. Authorities say there are no specific or credible threats against Sunday's game in San Francisco. Still, they're working to anticipate just about any type of attack terrorists might be planning. The business of imagining future terror threats also happens to be the subject of a new book authored by someone who knows the topic well, Congressman Michael McCaul. He's chairman of the House Homeland Security Committee. International Edition's Doug Bernard recently spoke with Representative McCaul and joins us now. Doug, what did he have to say?
Well, he started off the interview right off the bat by telling me that he believes the U.S. right now is, quote, in the highest threat environment since September 11th, 2001. And he's really speaking across all levels of society. Now, specifically about the Super Bowl, he referred to it as a national security event. Basically, that's a term of art that means that it is a likely target for terrorists who see it as a stage, who would like to create some havoc there. And it also means that security is going to be out in record numbers. So he is saying, the congressman, he expects everything at the Super Bowl this time to go off without a hitch. But the very fact that we're having these conversations illustrates this uncertain time that we live in.
So in general, what sorts of future attacks does he think the U.S. might be facing?
Well, many and varied, I guess, is the way to say it. So his book is titled Failures of Imagination, and that title is a reference to the September 11th, the 9/11 Commission, their conclusion that basically Al-Qaeda was able to plot the September 11th terror attacks right under our noses and carry them off with little more than box cutters, essentially, because we government officials failed to use our imagination to think about what they might be planning. So what he is saying is we need to think about what they might be thinking about. So he has several scenarios. One of them was a bioterror attack at Walt Disney World. Another was an effort to knock out the Congress, throwing the nation into chaos, not exactly like bedtime reading. And the final chapter is titled Going Dark. Now, in it, he describes essentially a coordinated cyber attack on both the U.S. financial sector and the power grid. He said this is the scenario that keeps him up at night, and he used the phrase, he said, potentially this could send the entire nation, quote, back to primitive times.
So what's he trying to do here other than scare the daylights out of us?
Well, he's being pretty successful on that count. I think it's important to remember, you know, these aren't just scary stories. These are plausible possibilities that security experts are warning about and saying the United States isn't prepared for. So what he's trying to do is get people thinking about what might happen so that they in turn will pressure their lawmakers to make sure they're doing everything they can to prepare for the future events. In short, he always said, it's always a danger to fight the last war or the last campaign. What we always need to be thinking about is how it's evolving, how terror is evolving, so we are ready to fight the next campaign.
The book is titled Failures of Imagination, and its author is the chair of the House Homeland Security Committee in Congress, Representative Michael McCaul. Doug Bernard, thanks so much.
You bet.
Every year, tens of millions of Chinese migrant workers head home for the New Year holiday. It's the largest annual mass migration of people, with travelers clogging China's airports and train stations. Shannon Van Sant reports from Hong Kong.
Next week begins the Year of the Monkey in China, with millions of people traveling to spend time with their families and celebrate the New Year with grand fireworks celebrations. China's huge population of migrant workers have already begun their journeys to home villages in the countryside. Wang Shi will soon board a very crowded train to see his family. He says he misses his parents and knows they have a much harder life back home than he does in Beijing. Chinese authorities estimate that nearly 3 billion trips will be made domestically over the New Year holiday. That marks a 3.6% rise in domestic travel over last year's festivities. 6 million will travel abroad this week, part of a broader trend of rising numbers of Chinese spending their vacation overseas. Outbound tourism from China was up 12.1% in 2015. 57-year-old An Xingfang bought tickets home to Shanxi province at the last minute and was surprised to get a seat. She was surprised she was able to purchase a seat so late, noting that last year she tried much earlier and was only able to get on standby. The huge number of travelers has resulted in a surge in gas consumption in China, with gasoline demand over the holiday increasing 242,000 barrels a day above the annual daily average. 42 million plane flights and 258 million one-way train journeys will be taken over the next week. The hectic travel season has caused massive delays, with bad weather stranding 100,000 people at the Guangzhou train station earlier this week. Authorities shut down several highways after bad weather caused nearly a two-mile traffic jam on an expressway connecting Jiangxi and Hubei provinces. 30-year-old Li Mei expects a smooth trip to her hometown. She says she's bringing gifts of clothing from Beijing for her family members back home. Once at home with their families, nearly 700 million people will tune into China's state broadcaster CCTV to watch this year's Spring Festival Gala, a variety show. In a week's time, millions will begin their journey back to the cities to begin work again. Shannon Van Sant for VOA News, Hong Kong.
This is International Edition. Rapper Andre 3000 of OutKast surprised a fan with a once-in-a-lifetime Uber ride recently. International Edition's David Byrd and VOA Soul Lounge host Shauna Renee talk about what happened.
So this is a really fun story. So he shows up in L.A. He is there to help put the finishing touches on Kanye West's new album, which is this highly anticipated album Kanye calls the best album of life. So Andre 3000 is there to go to the studio, and for whatever reason, Kanye doesn't send Andre a car. So he instead calls Uber. He meant to call Uber, and Uber is a car sharing service. And normally you get your own car. It's like a single passenger service. But
right.
there
Somebody,
is
the driver gets paid to pick you up.
Right. And it's just you. Well, they have this thing called Uber Pool, which allows you to carpool with other people who are going in your general direction. So Uber comes and picks him up, and there is a young lady who he is already in the car, and Andre, being the good sport that he is, says, all right, fine, I'll get in the car with this woman. And they drive toward the studio, and they hit it off. It turns out that he and this young lady lived in the same building at one time, and he said to her, well, listen, I'm on my way over here to the studio. Would you like to come with me? So she said, well, okay, why not? And so she pulls up to the studio, gets out, goes into the recording booth, and there's P. Diddy, Puffy, there's Kanye West, there's French Montana, 2 Chainz, and Kid Cudi, some of the biggest names in hip-hop, recording what is going to be, according to Kanye West, the biggest album of life. I mean, and now I know that there are probably young people all over the country hoping that the next time they get into an Uber, they'll get in with some famous hip-hop star and end up in the studio, maybe on a track.
If I called Uber, it'd be some guy who'd be like, oh, yeah, I'm just going to Fairfax. or one of those types of like, why are you, what, you want to share my car?
Right.
Get out. Keep driving. now, on a slightly different note, Uber has changed their app thing
mm-hmm.
where it looks different now, and this young lady got to rub shoulders with some of the princes of hip hop.
Sure.
And, Uber could almost use that for an ad.
Oh,
absolutely. Have Andre 3000 roll up in a car, go, hi.
Oh, absolutely. I don't doubt it. I looked for some statistics before I came in to see if Uber experienced a peak or a rise in usage. I didn't find anything. I'm going to keep looking for it. I'll post it up on Facebook or Twitter or something. But I have no doubt there are more people using Uber now than before. In fact, I downloaded the Uber app on my phone just in case.
Just in case I'm headed up U Street and somebody says, hey, we're going to the 9:30 Club.
No. Just in case.
Well, what do you think? Do you think chance encounters like this are really chance? What would you do if a famous hip-hop star suddenly wanted to share a ride with you? Let us know. Let Shauna know. You can hit her up on Twitter. She's at VOA Lady DJ. You can also send her a tweet at VOA _music. And you can also log on to our website. That's voanews.com.
That's our show. Have a great weekend.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States condemns the Boko Haram terrorist attacks on January 29th and 30th in northeast Nigeria. On January 30th, in the village of Dolori, the terrorist bombed a market, attacked a village, and firebombed huts. Boko Haram militants set fire to as many as 300 homes in the village, burning alive some people who were inside, including children. According to Nigeria's National Emergency Management Agency, at least 65 people were killed and 136 injured. Boko Haram, which in March 2015 pledged its allegiance to the Islamic State, has been attacking northern Nigeria for years. According to press reports, Boko Haram's insurgency has killed 20,000 people in the last 6 years and driven at least 2.3 million from their homes. Boko Haram continues to commit vicious attacks against the innocent, including children. This terrorist organization repeatedly has shown no regard for human life. We extend our deepest condolences to the families of the latest victims of Boko Haram. The United States will continue to support those affected by Boko Haram's violence through ongoing humanitarian aid and support services. In response to the threat posed by Boko Haram, President Barack Obama announced in October 2015 that the United States would send 300 U.S. troops, along with surveillance drones, to Cameroon to bolster a West African effort to counter the militant Islamist group. U.S. troops were tasked with conducting airborne intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance operations in the region. In a statement issued on February 2nd, State Department spokesperson John Kirby said the United States remains committed to supporting Nigeria and its Lake Chad Basin partners in the fight against terrorism.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials.